19 Celsius. For Scotland, it'll start off grey and misty and murky, particularly across eastern Scotland with a few showers. Cloudy in the west too, with the odd shower, but also some brightness across the northwest Highlands. Rain will edge into southwest and west Scotland during the day, but elsewhere staying rather cloudy with a few showers and a little brightness. Temperatures ranging from around 8 in the east to around 13 in the west. And then on Thursday and Friday, looks like for much of the UK, sunshine and showers, some heavy and thundery in places, feeling warm in any sunshine. Back to you, Chris.
Thanks, Dav. I think we should be off to some Mediterranean climes just to cheer us up now. In our book of the week, The Land Where Lemons Grow by Helena Attlee is a celebration of the Italian love affair with citrus fruit. Today, Sicily, the Mafia and blood oranges. The reader is Francesca Diamond.
It's years since I approached Palermo from the water, and yet I still remember the beauty of its position, caught in the curved embrace of mountains and sea. Goethe's account of sailing from Naples to Palermo in 1787 was dominated by seasickness, but when the ship finally docked, he was entranced by the vision of the city and the mountains behind it, illuminated by afternoon sun. He lingered on board for so long that the crew eventually escorted him ashore. A half-hour drive from the centre of the city will take you to a swathe of land that has been known as the Conca d'Oro, or Golden Bowl, ever since the 15th century. The orange and lemon trees that grow in this fertile ground look like part of the natural vegetation, but they are really expatriates living thousands of miles from their places of origin. They reached Italy for the first time with the Arabs who brought them along the Silk Road to Persia, where the orange's name changed to naranj. Until then, there had only been one kind of citrus in Europe, the citron, brought to Calabria by the Jews in about AD 70. There was little about Sicily's natural climate to make the island suited to growing tender lemons, or even the hardier sour orange as an agricultural crop. It delivered moisture only in winter. If they were ever to thrive and be grown on a commercial scale, citrus trees needed the summer's heat and winter moisture to be delivered simultaneously, mimicking the hot, wet climates of their native lands. These conditions could be created by an efficient irrigation system, but when the first Muslim farmers arrived on Sicily, they found only the crumbling and silted up remains of the aqueducts, conduits and dams built when the island was a part of the Roman Empire. The new irrigation system was a hybrid of devices borrowed from sophisticated systems used to trap, channel, store, lift and distribute water in Egypt, the Yemen, Mesopotamia and the Levant. Every river, spring and lake was exploited. Rainwater was captured in trenches on the sides of hills or mountains, and long, interconnected tunnels were cut through the bedrock below ground to harvest the water from aquifers. This irrigated landscape altered the significance of agriculture on the island, making it a much more profitable occupation and a more reliable source of employment. A century ago, this sweep of land, from mountain to sea, was covered almost entirely by citrus groves. Today, roads and modern buildings fragment the remnants of that green carpet, although from the village of Gibilrossa, a few miles east of Palermo, you can still see a few of the high sandstone walls surrounding citrus groves on level or gently sloping ground, the citrus terraces cut into the lower slopes of the mountain, and a scattering of the lovely walled farmyards called balli. It's a beautiful view, and yet during the 19th century some ugly and sinister events were played out in this green theatre. The perpetrators of these crimes were a disparate group of men. Bandits, smugglers and cattle thieves, and others with respectable roles as lawyers, politicians, estate managers and farmers. They were united by a desire for money and power, and they came together for the first time among the lemon groves on the Conca d'Oro to form an organisation that would soon be known as the Mafia, a word derived from the adjective mafioso, meaning bold or beautiful in the dialect of Palermo. Large estates had traditionally passed from father to son. But new laws had changed this ancient pattern of land ownership, creating fresh opportunities for investors, and soon the Concadoro was divided among thousands of different owners. Each of them had to spend enormous sums on buying plots of land, although the soil was often poor and stony. Gangs of labourers were needed to clear the stones, and sometimes the land had to be pre-planted with opuntia, the prickly pear cactus which has a powerful enough root system to break up rocky or compacted soil. Poor soil was improved by digging in huge quantities of topsoil and dung that had to be transported to the site over large distances. And before the new trees could be planted, there were wells to dig and irrigation systems to install. Walls were needed to protect the young trees from thieves and cold winds, and each new citrus garden had to have an access road and a building where tools and harvested fruit could be stored. All this work represented a considerable investment, and it was a long time before you could expect to pay it off, because citrus trees don't bear fruit until they are 3 years old, it's 8 years before they produce a proper crop, and many more before a new landowner could expect to make a profit. The mafiosi offered to protect their neighbours' interests by using their own staff as wardens, workers and armed guards, and they were only too happy to supply water or install water pumps for farmers who could not afford to dig wells of their own. It was mafiosi who acted as wholesale fruit merchants and brokers, generally buying the fruit when it was still on the tree. As soon as a sale was agreed, a single fruit was nailed to the outside of the door in the wall of the citrus garden, and a shotgun cartridge was often attached alongside it as a warning to potential intruders. The mafia gained total control of every aspect of cultivation from the mid-19th to the early 20th centuries, and if anybody failed to pay their protection money, it was also mafiosi who dispatched gangs to scale the wall and hack down the trees during the night, or vandalise irrigation systems and cut off water supplies, intimidating staff and murdering anyone who resisted them. Concadoro is still used as a metaphor for fertility and abundance, and yet the real Concadoro is not the only citrus-growing region in Sicily. Guy de Maupassant crossed Sicily in the spring of 1885 and remarked that the eastern shore exhaled such a powerful odour of blossoming orange trees that the whole channel is perfumed by it, as if it were a lady's bower. He had reached a magic triangle of land on the plain beneath Mount Etna, a small area that produces the best blood oranges in the world. The Arancia Rossa is a prince among oranges. Its distinctive colouring is due to the blood-coloured pigments called anthocyanins that are also found in red, purple and blue superfruits, such as blueberries. The development of anthocyanin pigments in oranges is only triggered by a difference of at least 10 degrees Celsius between day and nighttime temperatures while the fruit is ripening in the autumn and winter. In the shadow of Mount Etna, it can be 20 degrees Celsius on a winter's day, but at night, there is always a sharp drop in temperature. So it's cold, not warmth, that has made Sicily the most reliable source of blood oranges in the world. At the height of a Sicilian citrus harvest, the average packing house sorts and packs 1,500 tons of oranges a day. A few years ago, I tried to get work during the orange harvest. Every farm I asked simply said no. And then someone explained that the orange crop is sold to a citrus merchant while still on the tree, just as it was on the Concadoro in the 19th century. The merchant or the packing house will send their own team of pickers, and so the farmers had no power to offer me work. Eventually, I was put in touch with Rudolf and Benedicta von Freyberg, a German couple who have lived for decades at St. Giorgio on the plain between Mount Etna and the sea. The von Freyberg's house is surrounded by 120 hectares of citrus groves that lap like a green sea around the edges of its garden. These are not the walled or terraced citrus gardens of the Concadoro. They are huge, open expanses of level ground covered in neat lines of trees. I'd arrived in time for the Tarocco blood orange harvest. The pickers were men, all of them Sicilian, because orange picking isn't a job given much to foreigners. We stood about in dawn light, sipping coffee from tiny plastic cups. "What are you up to?" they wanted to know. "Why are you so interested in orange picking?" As soon as the coffee was finished, one of them set off purposefully towards the trees. "Hey!" everyone shouted, for there were cigarettes to be smoked before picking could start. And then everything happened at once. A lorry roared up and piles of brightly coloured plastic boxes were thrown out of it onto the ground. Everyone grabbed a bucket attached to a broad strap and slung it over one shoulder. They pulled on gloves and soon they had propped up their ladders and settled in among the branches of the trees. At first, it looked as if the pickers had magic tips to their fingers. They seemed only to pass a hand across the fruit to detach it from the tree, but then I caught a glimpse of the tiny secateurs concealed in their palms. "It's not child's play," they said. "New pickers usually cut themselves." Someone sang, someone swore, everyone told jokes, and they all worked at frenetic speed. It was an enclosed and private world beneath the tree branches, and soon the pickers had disappeared among them. Sometimes I'd glimpse a woolly hat emerging from the leaves at the top of a distant tree. Then it was gone. There were fallen oranges on the ground. Some had already been mined by insects that left holes in their sides, revealing red flesh like gaping, gory wounds. I didn't stay very long. Despite all my determination to work during a harvest, once there I felt I was only playing, while all around me men were working hard. They worked as a team to clear the fruit from a specified area of trees. The faster they worked, the sooner they could go home. At the end of the 1950s, the mafia began to invest the profits from their activities in a building boom so brutally destructive that it is generally known as the Sack of Palermo. The Concadoro, which had encircled Palermo for centuries like a beautiful green sash, was bulldozed to make way for uncontrolled ribbon development of jerry-built blocks that still overshadow a few remaining villas today, towering over them like a grotesque and gigantic parody of citrus trees. Today, Concadoro has become a strange, liminal landscape, dissected by roads, disfigured by industrial units and tower blocks, and scattered with wrecked cars, shattered wardrobes, and old fridges that have washed up like driftwood on the edges of roads and fields. On the northwest edge of Palermo, I had supper with Giuseppe Barbera, professor of arboriculture at the university. His house originally stood in a large garden among citrus groves that still marked the city's edge. Then an enormous road was built over the garden in front, and tower blocks took the place of the orange and lemon trees, dwarfing even the gigantic banyan tree that dominates the back garden. We sat outside as dusk fell and lights came on in tower blocks behind the banyan. Barely 40 years ago, a single hectare of Sicilian orange trees would fetch the same astronomical price as a hectare of land among the Tuscan vineyards producing one of Italy's most valuable wines. As we ate, I asked Barbera for his prognosis on the future of Sicily's citrus trees. "They will go back to being ornamental garden plants," he said, "just as they were when the Arabs first brought them here."
Francesca Diamond was reading The Land Where Lemons Grow by Helena Attlee. It was abridged by Lawrence Waring and produced by Kirstine Cameron. And tomorrow, the author searches for the rare Lake Garda lemon. Thank you. sailing by. And now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Wednesday the 23rd of April. There are warnings of gales in southeast Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800. High Norwegian Sea 1035, expected Baltic 1036 by 1800 Wednesday. New high expected South Biscay 1021 by same time. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours, southwest Viking, easterly 4 or 5, veering southeasterly 5 to 7, rain or showers, mainly good. Northeast Viking, north at Sira, variable 3 or 4, becoming southeasterly 4 or 5, showers later, mainly good. South at Sira, easterly 5 to 7, but mainly 4 or 5 in northeast, rain or showers, moderate or